Hey everybody, welcome to our last January edition of Sunday Unpacked. This is Monica here with Pastor James. How are you doing
Hello.
Today?
I'm good. You?
I'm good. That temperature is nice outside and
yes, much better.
Sunny and bright and beautiful out there. So
snow's melting. That's a good thing.
Yep. So we're here to talk about Sunday's sermon, The Story of God's Love, Genesis 3. And you have had a couple questions sent in. Were they emailed or were they texted?
We had one texted and one on the Connect card. So
All right. That's
two good ways to do it, right?
That's right. Yep. Text your questions to 217-712-6621 or email them to questions@taylorvillechristian.com. And yes, there is always the Connect card, and we love to get those questions. So Sin and the Fall is not a very fun topic, but so close after creation, you know, God's majesty and the beauty of the world and the things that he did. And, you know, so many times this is called, I think the fall is even what Genesis 3 is titled, isn't it, in some Bibles? I know one
of
them it was.
You know, what's interesting is I'm not sure that language is ever used. It's not used in Genesis 3. I don't remember if it's used in the New Testament or not. That'd be a good thing to look up. But anyway, that's what we call it. Yeah.
Yeah. And we always say that we live in a sinful and fallen world.
We do. We do.
And that's
correct.
You know, that statement points directly to Adam and Eve's exit from the Garden of Eden and into the world outside of God's holy presence.
Right.
And basically, this chapter is the story of humans choosing their own way over God's way. And I feel like we've been fighting this battle ever since. And I think.
In the message, I said that the rest of the Bible is all about dealing with what happens in Genesis 3.
Yeah. So one of the questions that was sent in is, if God knew that Adam and Eve would sin and eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, why did he create the tree in the first place and put it in the garden?
Well, I mean, this is one of those questions that we could take to a lot of stories in the Bible, right? I mean, people make bad choices, and the question then is, well, why did God even give them that option, right? I mean, why were there idols that the people of Israel could worship? If God didn't want them to worship idols, then he should have somehow just done away with that. I mean, we could go all the way through the Bible with that. But it's a good question, because we want to know, why did God allow for people to take the wrong path, to go in the wrong direction? Because the consequences were dire. So why is that? Well, I think it goes back to, and sometimes we use this as the sort of simple answer, but it's really not simple, in that God has chosen to allow us to make our own choices. In other words, he's given us free will.
Right.
So God doesn't force us into submission. He doesn't force us into obedience. He doesn't force us into faith. God allows us to choose both right and wrong, because he wants our devotion to him to be voluntary. He wants us to choose that for ourselves. So I think that's why this is the way it is. There's something about that. The other thing is, we don't know God's timing. I mean, Adam and Eve, we don't know how long they had even been alive at this point. Was it that they were not supposed to take of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil at this point, and God would somehow later change the rules when they were ready for that? I don't know, you know?
Right.
And this is, at the end, one of those questions that we don't fully know the answer to, because we can't ask God yet. So,
right. Yep.
But I think there'll be several we'll talk about today. There are things we wonder about in this story, but we don't have as good an answer for as we'd probably like.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, God created us for relationship with him.
Right.
And love freely given and freely received from both parties in a relationship is the purest kind of relationship that you would want.
Right. I mean, we don't want our spouse to somehow be coerced into loving us. We want to know if they've chosen to love us.
And God gave us free will so that we could love him back and choose Correct. His way and choose the gifts that he has given us.
Yep.
Rather than think that we know best, which there are many times we just do our own thing and forget to ask him. You know what I mean? It's
absolutely
human knowledge. So you did talk about some of the consequences of sin and that they included, you know, what does sin bring? Sin brings shame.
Yeah.
Brings
guilt, shame,
fear.
All those things.
Yeah. Awareness of the things that are wrong. Was the serpent aware, like the knowledge of good and evil? Did they know what evil was? Or was it just a word they didn't understand?
It brings up a whole host of issues in my mind because, like it says, the serpent was the craftiest of all the animals that God had created. So are there other animals that are crafty and the serpent is just the craftiest of all of them? Could all of them have discussions with human beings at this point? I mean, I wish we knew. We don't know anything about any others. We are only given information about the serpent. But it seems to me that if the serpent is this intent on sort of drawing in Eve to do something that is opposed to God, there has to be some level of knowledge of evil. I mean, he is actively working for the power of evil. So it seems like he knows that. Now, again, it's one of those questions that we can take a stab at and get some, you know, pretty good guesses about, but we can't know for sure.
Right.
But wow, that crafty, it's hard to know, hard for me to imagine he doesn't know what evil's all about.
Right. And with man being made in the image of God, that is the goodness and that is the righteousness and that is holiness. Correct. And would they have even known anything but that until the serpent was, you know?
Until they take that fruit.
Right.
Right.
So was Eve present when God gave the instructions about the tree of knowledge?
If you read Genesis 2, Adam is warned about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil before the woman is created. So it's after that. We talked about last week that the man needed a suitable helper. Well, all that discussion and all that activity takes place after God gives this warning. But either God gave that instruction to her or Adam passed that on to her because she seems well aware that they are not supposed to eat of this tree. Right. So somehow she knows what God said.
Right. And then she kind of modified what
she did.
God said. So was that Eve's modification or was that Adam's modification?
We don't know. We don't know whether she added that little, hey, we're not allowed to eat this or even touch it or we will die.
Yeah.
I don't know if, you know, Adam's trying to protect them both. If you don't, you can't eat it if you don't touch it. So if we don't touch it, then we're not going to have any chance of sin here or, you know, violating God's command. But either he or she did. It'd be interesting to know which, but we just don't know.
Right. Do you feel like we today have gotten better about not making modifications to God's instructions, or do you feel like we're still in that same old trap?
Sometimes we do it right, and that was a big problem in Jesus' day.
Yeah.
And one of the struggles that Jesus has with a lot of the religious leaders is they are laying heavy burdens on the people. They are making obeying the law even more difficult than it already is, and he's got a problem with that.
Yeah.
So that was a big issue then. And I think sometimes if we're not careful, we as Christians do the same thing for good reason, right? It's not that we're trying to make life difficult, but oftentimes, for example, we know something that our kids shouldn't get involved with. Well, we sort of back it up, right? I mean, if you don't need to go and do this thing, then let's don't even go to that place ever.
Right.
Because if you're not there, you can't do the thing. And we do it because we're trying to protect either our kids or ourselves or someone we love, or not just our own kids, but kids in the church.
Right.
And so it's well-meaning, but sometimes our intent on protecting then becomes another rule that if you break that rule, you're a bad person. And maybe that's not even something that God has said. It's just something that we've said. So I think we have to be careful about it even now.
Yeah. Good, good thoughts on that one. So there is, you know, you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for when you eat of it, you will certainly die.
Right.
Yet we know Adam lived a long physical life even after eating the fruit, as did Eve.
Right.
So what, I mean, they eventually physically died.
Right.
Did they spiritually die right then? What is the type of death that they would die?
Okay, so God says, if you eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, then you will certainly or surely die. They eat, and maybe we're sort of expecting something's going to happen, and it doesn't happen. It's not like poison, right? They don't immediately start foaming at the mouth and then keel over dead. So that's not what happens. So is this not true? Did God give them a false warning? Well, I think there could be a couple things at work here. One thing it could be at work is the incredible grace of God, right? I mean, they did what God told them not to do. And his warning was, if you do this, you will die. But if you read through the rest of the Old Testament, there's more than one occasion when God warns his people not to do something and says, there's going to be punishment for this if you do it. And here's the punishment. And sometimes God postpones the punishment. I mean, the people of Israel got opportunity after opportunity after opportunity when God said, don't do this, and they did it. God would often give them another chance. So is this just God's grace at work? They deserved death, but they didn't get death right then. Well, maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's that they had access to the tree of life, and as long as they had the tree of life, they would stay alive, but now they're thrown out of the garden, so they are going to die because they don't have access to that tree anymore. Well, that could be part of it as well. Now, the other side of this is, are they going to face a spiritual death? And I think the answer to that is yes, that there is a separation from God because they've chosen a path that is opposed to what God has told them to do. So they have this special relationship with God in the garden that seems different from what comes after it, and then extends to all humanity as we all make the same mistake of refusing to do what God has told us to do or doing what he told us not to do. And so there is a spiritual death, and we see that show up in the New Testament. That's language that we see, that our sin has caused spiritual death, and we only find that life in Christ. So yes, I think all of those things could be involved. It's not just one of them, but maybe all of them, that God is graceful and that they also experience a death that is different from just physical death, though that will come to them as well.
So I just had this thought just before we started recording. So before sin, were their spirit and flesh connected? And then when they, and because they were the image of God, and so they were just good. But then when they gained knowledge that there was good and evil, that kind of just split, because before they only knew God's good. And then all of a sudden they know evil, and they realize that what they just did was evil or wrong or a sin against God's command. They didn't even know what that was before, did they?
What you're bumping up against is a problem that comes up, I think, whenever we study this passage.
Yeah.
And the problem is, okay, God has given them a command. The command is, don't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Well, if they don't eat from that tree, how are they supposed to know what is good and what is evil, right? So do they know that what they are doing when they eat of that fruit is actually wrong? Is it evil? You know, and then that has implications to other things like what you were just talking about.
Yeah.
So I think from what I read here and what we, you know, the way the Bible talks about this issue in other places, I think it's pretty clear that they understood they were supposed to follow what God said.
Right.
And that God had told them to do this, and they chose, God told them not to do this, and they chose to go ahead and do it. So I think they understood that there's something wrong about this. Now, were they able to go through a deep moral philosophical conversation about what's right and wrong in the world? Maybe that was not what they were able to do at that right. point, because they haven't had this.
Right.
But it's clear to me from this passage that they are fully formed human beings, in that they're completely physical. God formed them. He breathed life into them, which mm-hmm. is the spirit, the wind.
Right.
So I think they're fully human beings, both spirit and body. And they have a sense of obedience to God, but maybe not a sense of being able to draw out sort of ethics in itself, you know, what's right. for human beings in general. And right. the tree of the knowledge would give them something more. So, okay. I mean, I think that's my best sort of guess at what you're asking, which is a hard question. I mean,
it it's is. One that, yeah.
is good to bring up.
Yeah. So does the New Testament offer us any clarity about them eating the fruit of death and yet they have a long life?
Well, I don't think it clears that issue up too much, except that I think that I mentioned 1 Corinthians chapter 15, and you
right.
talked a little bit about that too before we got on, that I mean, and that's one of the great passages in all the New Testament. If you haven't read 1 Corinthians 15 in a while, read through it.
It's really
good.
There's
a lot there. It's powerful. Yeah. And Paul is getting at, we are both fully physical and spiritual beings, and that our bodies will die. Mm-hmm. Okay. We know that, but that there will be physical resurrection. So we die. Why? Because we followed Adam's example and we sin, for as in Adam all die, and then so in Christ we'll all be made alive. We are anticipating what God's going to do in the end when he raises us to new life. So, I mean, all of that comes from what happens right here, right?
Right.
That mm-hmm. we're facing this death, both physical and spiritual, and that it's only going to be, you know, put back together when we get to resurrection.
Yeah, I like later in that chapter that Paul talks about the first Adam and then the last Adam, which would be Jesus Christ.
Right, right.
And there is a natural body. There is a spiritual body. The first man became a living, Adam became a living being. The last Adam, a life-giving spirit.
And yeah.
The spiritual did not come first, but the natural, and after that, the spiritual. So, and I just love that the struggle that we have now, sometimes in our flesh, to do the right thing, is promised that it's that struggle is going to be over, and we can
right.
have peace in Christ, but we're not going to have a sinless life until we're there. And I just,
right.
I love that there's hope for that.
And he is putting Adam, who is at the beginning of creation, and Jesus,
right.
who will be there at the end,
right, right?
When all things are made right. And
right.
sort of drawing that together. And because of Adam's sin, again, not that we inherit his guilt. I don't see that.
Right.
But that we make the same decision. We choose the same path. And so
right.
we stand guilty as Adam did. But it's only Jesus that deals with that problem.
So let me see where we're at. Does John, we talked about John with creation and how he added Jesus, you know, 1 John 1:4, that Jesus was
right.
there in creation, and that through Jesus we have life. I think there's quite a few verses in John that tell us that that Jesus is there.
He's the way, the truth, and the life,
yes.
Right?
Yes, and no one comes to the Father except for me.
Right.
So what can we learn about Jesus bringing life and kind of connect that to God breathing life into Adam the first time?
I think we can look at it in a couple ways, and sort of connects with what we were just talking about that right. You brought up, that Jesus offers us life now. So there is spiritual death. When we choose sin, we're separated from God. Jesus allows us to be made alive even now, so that we have a relationship with God and we once again can reflect the image of God in our lives more fully, because he makes us right with God again. So there's that big piece of it, that Jesus changes life right now, today. Mm-hmm. But also the forward-looking sense that Jesus will bring life, just as Jesus was raised from the dead, we too will be raised from the dead. So we have that to look forward to, that death is not the end, that the story's not over when we go to the grave, but that there is life to come as well. So he is life now and he is life forever. So there's always that already and not yet sense, as long as mm-hmm. we're in this life.
Right. And it's trying to find a way to live in the the tension of the now and not yet.
Yep, absolutely.
I love Genesis 3:15, where we see that Jesus is very much present. And I believe that you pointed that out Sunday too.
Right.
Where the descendant of the woman, Jesus, will crush the serpent's head and his own heel will be bruised. And Jesus suffered, but death and sin were defeated. And just as Adam and Eve were forced to acknowledge their sin, we are forced to acknowledge our sin too.
Yeah.
Why do we still try to hide our sins rather than running to the forgiveness and peace and life that's offered to us through Jesus Christ?
Because I think we deal with the same effects of sin that Adam and Eve did, right? We face the same guilt and shame that they did. And even if we know we can be forgiven, it is hard to acknowledge our sin, because mm-hmm. that involves that feeling of guilt and the feeling of shame, as others know about, or even if they don't know about it, our own shame within. Mm-hmm. So we want to avoid that. And so rather than dealing with it openly, we pretend it's not there, we push it to the side, we act like it's not a big deal, instead of openly sort of confronting that sin and calling it what it is. And we think if we do that, somehow it's not as real, we don't have to grapple with it, and we don't face the shame and the guilt, which are powerful forces for many, many people.
I think that consequences are probably, for me, lot of times, sure. Consequences just want to, I feel like they're just a slap in the face and make me feel like the grace that I just have to go back and beg God for grace and mercy again, and that I will walk in that forgiveness instead of just allowing those things to be a part of my life. I mean, consequences are real, but I don't have to live in the condemnation of sin when I've been forgiven of it.
Correct.
And a God will give us what we need to get through that moment, just like he did Adam and Eve. He took them and made clothing for them because he cared that they knew that they were naked. He cared that they were dealing with the consequence of their sin and didn't want them to walk in that condemnation. So he's like, here you go. I will take care of you. I'm going to take care of you.
And the church should be the place where this is demonstrated the most clearly, mm-hmm. Where we do say, okay, yeah, you did that thing and you repented and you asked forgiveness and you attempted to make it as right as you could make it. And then we should be the people who are willing to say, okay, let's move on. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, I mean, honestly, Christians aren't great at that. And it's hard to do because we may be hurt or someone we love has been hurt and it's hard to move on. And yet it should be part of who we are. And I think that's part of what this is saying to us.
Yeah. How can we seek God's help in just being better Christians and being better people and loving better?
Well, I mean, you know, it's the Sunday school answer, but here we are. You got to talk about prayer, right? Yep. I mean, and not just, hey, God, help me with that. But I mean, this deep sense that we are taking this to God, knowing that we are guilty, knowing that we do carry shame with us. Also knowing that we don't want to repeat the same things that we've done in the past that have brought harm on ourselves and other people. So I think we have to seek that out. I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about this next Sunday, but we need each other too in this. I think God uses other Christians to help us walk through this.
Yeah. So what's been the most impactful for you today? We're a little short on time. I mean, this is not a very long podcast, but sometimes that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think for me, this one is, it's a sad story in a way, and just how one moment can really change things.
Yeah.
And, of course, not every mistake we ever make is going to have life-altering consequences, but sometimes the decisions we make that may seem small do have a big impact. And so we really have to think through those things. And I think that's sort of where I am with this. And again, it's not so pleasant. It's sort of a negative lesson in some ways to learn from the story, but it's a negative story. So we need to learn something from it. And so I guess that's it for me. I don't know. Yeah. You got anything different from that?
I feel like just for me personally, trying to keep a positive spin on it, because as I've said before, I can be prone to self-condemnation and that. And I think that all of the verses in the New Testament that I was just kind of poring over and comparing when God breathed life into Adam and Jesus is our life, you know, and we can have that, you know, and I'm thinking of Romans 5:18, where consequently, just as one trespass resulted in condemnation for all people, so also one righteous act resulted in justification and life for all people.
Right.
And, you know, the first part of John, which is my all-time favorite, in him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind, and we can still have that light in us, and we can still kind of take a little bit of that Eden goodness and that Eden righteousness and allow that to draw people to Christ in us as we bear his image. And I think if we don't stand on that, if we stood in just Genesis 3 and we didn't take the light and the life offered to us through Jesus Christ, that we would stand in condemnation. I'm glad we don't have to. I'm so thankful that we don't have to.
Well, right. And that's why we don't need to preach Genesis 3 apart from the Gospels.
Exactly.
Because if we do, it's hopeless, right? We have to pair that. And so I think it's important for us to tell the story of Jesus, even if in a small way, even while we're way back here in Genesis 3, and it's going to be, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years before Jesus comes along. Still, we need that part of the story.
Right. Yep. I creation and the fall, and I don't like to stay just on the fall. I like to see and offer the hope that is Jesus in there. And I think that you do a great job of, you know, pointing that out. Your sermon points were, sin has consequences for us and others. We need to have the knowledge of the power of sin, but we need to seek God's help in overcoming temptation and accept the forgiveness that we find in Jesus. I think that is accepting the forgiveness that we find in Jesus. That's probably the biggest point.
We don't have the whole story.
Exactly. And I think that is the biggest point in Genesis 3.
Yeah.
Is that we have him. Yeah. All right. So here's looking forward to next week. What do we have? Genesis 4? Yeah. Well,
Genesis 4, which is no happier than Genesis 3, right?
Right.
We have the first murder, and it's brother kills a brother. So it's not right. a pleasant story either. But there's a lot of lessons here. You know, I mentioned this Sunday, but it is not like the Bible is some detached book that's just full of spiritual platitudes. It is real people dealing right. with real and sometimes raw human emotions right. and grappling with that. And then sometimes the powerfully destructive results of it. And
yeah.
that's what we're talking about Sunday. It is yeah. hard, but it's real, and it teaches us some important things. Right. So hopefully we'll get something important out of it, even though it's another hard story.
It's okay. We got to take the hard stuff. That makes the good That's right. stuff that much better. All
That's
right?
right.
All right. Well, until next week, we hope you all have a great week, and we will hopefully see you Sunday and have a podcast for you next week.
See you then.
Bye.